Welcome to the Enlightened Investor Podcast, your one-stop shop for investing in the future you wish to live in.
Hi guys, how's everybody doing? Welcome to another episode of the Enlightened Investor Podcast. Firstly, my apologies. For various reasons, I haven't been able to release new episodes for a while now. Hopefully, that won't be the case in the future. Today, we have a special guest with us, Mr. Manish Tapkara, who is the founder and CEO of EKI Energy Services Limited, a dynamic startup based in Indore, India. Having built a billion-dollar climate change solutions business over a span of 14 years in an effort to overcome global warming, his company has now become a well-known name in the global climate change solutions industry. EKI Energy is one of the world's largest traders of carbon credits, a commodity that is pivotal to humanity's race to a carbon-neutral future. Although at a very nascent stage today, the climate change solutions and carbon credits industry is growing at an exponential rate as we witness a once-in-a-generation transition from a fossil fuel-based economy to a carbon-neutral world. The limited time we have to successfully implement this transition before it's too late makes this megatrend all the more important and exponential in nature. In this episode, Manish and I take a deep dive into the carbon credit industry and explore the future of companies like EKI Energy in an effort to enlighten all our listeners about the exponential industries of the future. I would like to provide a few disclaimers to all our listeners before we start. This podcast is only meant for educational purposes, with a mission to enlighten more people about various exponential industries and technologies of the future. I am not an investment advisor, and I would suggest you do your own due diligence before investing in anything discussed on this podcast. Also, I would like to disclose that I have been and I still am an investor in EKI Energy Services Limited, so my views may be biased, and this is in no way a recommendation to invest. All right, with that out of the way, let's dive straight into my conversation with the founder and CEO of EKI Energy, Manish Tapkara. Right, so Manish, it's really good to have you here. Good morning. And I'll start with an easy one. What exactly is a carbon credit? And how does it help us to transition to a net zero future?
Yeah, thanks, Stomil. Good morning. what is carbon credit? So the word itself shows the first the carbon means carbon dioxide, and carbon dioxide is one of the greenhouse gas out of seven greenhouse gases. So one is carbon dioxide, another one is methane, CH4, then nitrous oxide, N2O, HFC, PFC, SF6 and NF3. These are the seven greenhouse gases. So if you do any business activity which helps to reduce any of these greenhouse gases or absorb any of these seven greenhouse gases, then we are eligible to earn carbon credits. One carbon credit, the basic terminology says if you do any business activity which helps to reduce 1 ton carbon dioxide. So all the seven greenhouse gases, the remaining six greenhouse gases used to be measured in a common terminology called as tons of CO2 equivalent. So for example, if you are reducing methane, so if you are reducing 1 ton methane, that means it's equivalent to around 24 tons of carbon dioxide. And each greenhouse gas used to have its own global warming potential. And then from there, we can equate how many number of carbon credits would be generated if you do any business activity. So the carbon credits used to be of two types. One is avoidance-based carbon credits, and another one is the sequestration-based carbon credits. That means absorption-based carbon credits. So avoidance-based carbon credit means if you do install a solar power project, for example, or wind power project, or do any energy efficiency project, then all those projects comes under the category of avoidance-based. Because, so for example, if you have a 100 megawatt solar power project, and if you generate, say, or a simple example, if you can take, if it's a 1 megawatt solar power project, and if you are generating around 20 leg electrical units, so those 20 leg electrical units would helping to replace for the similar power not to be generated from the coal based power plants or thermal based power plants. So that means equivalent amount of fossil fuel would not be used at that particular power plant, and that means the equivalent number of carbon amount of carbon dioxide would not be generated because of your 1 megawatt solar power plant. So that means you are helping to avoid equivalent number of carbon, equivalent tons of CO2 to be emitted into the atmosphere. And that is why you are eligible to earn carbon credit benefits. So these are called as the avoidance based, and another one is the absorption based or sequestration based. So for example, if you are putting up a forest in some, say 5,000 acres or hectares or 10,000 hectares or maybe 50,000 1-lakh hectares, for example. So you are helping to sequester or to absorb carbon dioxide, which do exist into the atmosphere, and such kind of activities used to yield absorption-based carbon credits or sequestration-based carbon credits. So there are various technologies which are now upcoming related to the carbon sequestration. And although all those technologies are not very much commercially feasible, so the best solution, the best option these days for sequestration-based credits is the nature-based solution. So if you do any intervention in reference to forest, agriculture, or mangroves, you would be eligible to earn carbon credit. So this is the broad category of carbon, the terminology, what does it mean, how we calculate it, and the two different types of carbon credits there, which used to be there. And in the future, carbon sequestration based credits or absorption based credits would become more and more famous as compared to avoidance based credit, because as you see, the net zero, the definition of net zero means whatever the emission you are doing, you need to absorb the same. Avoidance would not be the solution in future. So that's why we have formed a new company with Shell. And there we are highly focused to create nature-based solution projects or carbon sequestration or absorption-based projects.
So I still understand that there are two different kinds here, where there's a voluntary market and then there's a compliance market, like how you have the EU ETS, which is compliance. And I think what EKI mainly does is deal with voluntary. Can you kind of give us an idea of the difference between these two?
So the compliance carbon market means you have mandate from your regional government or federal or national government that you need to reduce your emission. And if you are not able to do the same, then you are allowed to buy carbon credits either from two options. One is the domestic, the credits which are originated at the domestic level. And the second option is you can buy it from the international community. Or that means foreign carbon credits, you can say, which are not originated from within the nation. So earlier in Europe, in EU ETS, from 2005 to 2020, percentage of international carbon offsets were allowed to be sold there. In recent EU ETS, European Union Carbon Emission Trading Scheme, they are not allowing any international offset, while Korean ETS, South Korean ETS Emission Trading Scheme, they do allow the same, provided if you do invest into some particular project with some more terms and conditions that had been imposed by KETS mechanism. So this is the category which comes under the compliance one. Another category is the voluntary one. So in India or in majority of the developing nations, Whatever the carbon credits originated within the nation, within our developing nations, we are only allowed to be sold in the voluntary market. So we do not have any exposure. We do not have any alliance to sell the credits in any ETS, you can say, or any mechanism. We would not be able to sell. But in coming future, under Article 6 of the Paris Agreement, we would have another chance to sell carbon credits originated from developing nations or from any nation under Article 6.4 of Paris Agreement. So that is the compliance program, while the voluntary program means the buyers of such kind of carbon credits. So for example, if it's a Delta Airlines or European Union Parliament or FIFA World Cup. So all these kind of companies who are not obligated to reduce the emissions, if they buy the credits under the voluntary pledges that they have signed. So we call this particular market as the voluntary carbon market.
Okay, fair enough. Now, so getting a little deeper into this, there's different types of credits as well. You have red credits, you have blue credits, you have RECs, and all of these have different prices. Now, can you explain to us why there's this difference in prices and what basically defines the value of that particular credit?
So there are different carbon credit standards like clean development mechanism, which came from Article 12 of Kyoto Protocol. And earlier it was considered under the compliance mechanism. Now all the credits which are originated or which are developed under CDM also used to be sold in the voluntary carbon markets. Another purely voluntary carbon credit mechanisms are verified carbon standard, gold standard, global carbon council. So these are the various carbon credit standards are there. Apart from carbon credits, there is a new environmental commodity. So we call all these environmental attributes as the environmental commodity, a kind of an environmental commodity. So carbon credits we used to measure it in tons of CO2, while the renewable energy attributes in the form of megawatt hours, that are also tradable. So in India, we do have RPO obligation, renewable purchase obligation, under which REC, renewable energy certificates, used to be sold in international platform. At the international platform, there are two, three different mechanisms. One is international renewable energy certificates, TIGERs, gold standard level IRECs. So there are various different standards for renewable energy attributes, wherein we do not convert all those megawatt hours, because renewable energy attributes means that the project should be grid connected or electricity generation based project. And we directly measure the attribute into the megawatt hour. We do not convert the same into the tons of CO2. So there is only single parameter between megawatt hour and tons of CO2, which is grid emission factor, or the emission factor, by which what is the multiplication factor, with the help of which we will be able to convert megawatt hour into tons of CO2. So in India, Central Electricity Authority, they used to declare this grid emission factor every 1 or 2 or 3 year frequency. And as of now, it's 0.93. So 1 ton CO2 would be emitted when 1 megawatt hour electricity would be generated in India. It's a aggregated figure. So all the projects, either wind, solar, hydro, biomass, biogas, fossil fuel based, like HFO based or coal based or natural gas based, if you do, or nuclear based project, if you do sum all the electricity generated versus the emission all the projects would be doing. So obviously renewable energy project, they do not do any emission. We consider them as the zero project emission from those projects, but the projects like natural gas power projects or fossil fuel based power projects, they used to emit. So if we'll do sum all the tons of CO2 divided by all the megawatt hour, so in India, it's 0.93 tons of CO2 per megawatt hour used to be generated.
Okay.
So this is the broad category in between the carbon credits, tons of CO2 equivalent, and the megawatt hours, so that is renewable energy attributes. Now, Since the industry is voluntary in nature, various buyers, they used to position themselves. So for example, if a solar power project is, they are located in India, and if the similar solar power project is located in Kenya, so in Kenya, it's very tough, for example, to arrange for the funds, to arrange for the technology, to arrange for the manpower who can execute, the financial resources we can execute. So obviously the project cost would be higher in that particular nation as compared to India. So the project owner used to position themselves that they want to sell the credit at the higher rate in Kenya for the same solar power project for the same tons of CO2 as compared to India. So the carbon credit rates used to vary because of the country of origin, vintage effect. So if any credit which is originated or which is developed during the year 2010 would be cheaper as compared to 2022. So this is another, the tech based on the technology. So for example, across the world, geothermal based power projects are very less. And if any project located in Kenya, for example, if they want to sell, they can position themselves ki, they want to sell the similar tons of CO2, which is originated from either solar power project or wind power project or from geothermal based project. But since the same technology is not very much feasible or maybe costly in nature or not very easily available in other nations, so they position themselves that they want to sell the credits at the higher rates. Then the SDG parameters, Sustainable Development Goal parameters, were how any particular project is supporting of those 17 SDG, out of 17 SDG goals, either if it's 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, based on that also the rates used to vary. Then the marketing material we do prepare, the presentation that we used to prepare, PPT, photographs, videos, then who is presenting, the quality of trader, you can say, or the quality of seller also makes the difference. Then the auditor who used to do audit of all these kind of projects, third-party inspection companies, designated right. operational entities. That also makes some difference because there are some buyer, they clearly tell that they want, they are located in Germany. They want the third-party inspection company should be from Germany. And if you are able to bring all those credits, I'm ready to pay higher higher value. So there are various factors, and nobody can, and there is no any single parameter. For example, if the country of origin is rarest and say technology is rarest, and but you may be able to find that with all deadly combinations, the credit, which is then ultimately it depends on the budget the client wants to pay and the desperation of the seller when they want to bring the revenue within their books. So all these different parameters, permutation and combination, used to derive a value, and there is no any exchange. There is no any regulatory body which used to mention that this particular, with all this particular deadly combinations, what should be the exact rate. So it's all over-the-counter trades used to happen. And based on the experience, based on the time that we spend in the market, we would be able to take an exact decision at what particular rate we should sell the credit. So that is totally, you can say, intelligence based market where do you position yourself, and either that means there is a high confusion used to happen for the seller at what rate they should sell the credit, because someone, for example, if they have offered $1 and within 10-15 days another guy may be offering $1.75 and they are totally confused that either they would be able to sell at $3. And by the time they wait for $3, the rate used to come and it may become $0.5. So it's a very trust based, intelligence based. Trust based means whosoever is the consultant for or the advisor for the seller of the project credits, they should trust their advisor because the seller do not know what is the global market position, because we are not only the seller. India, for example, a solar power project based in India is not only a seller in the global carbon market. We do have to compete with other nations, with other technologies based in those nations, like India is there, China, Brazil, whole South America is there, Southeast Asia is there, African nations are there. So there are various sellers. And now, during last 15 years, the credits which are originated from the developing nations, they were very famous. But now the credits which are originated from the developed nations are also getting good demand. So the credits which are originated from Turkey or maybe from UK or from Germany, they are also now in the competition. So it's a high trust that seller should develop or the consultant or advisor where they should position and where they should sell the credits, when they should sell the credits. Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. So, I had another question prepared, but since you're talking about trust and expertise and knowledge about the market, it's been a while since you've been in this industry. It's all coming out right now. It's in the news now, but you've been doing this for a very long time. Yeah. I personally feel that is a competitive advantage for you, because anyone new coming in, firstly, this is a new industry, which means you everything you do is an experiment, because you're doing it for the first time and no one has done it before you, right? So your instincts matter a lot in this case, and also hiring people, your employees, training them. I don't think there's probably a lot of institutes that teach you how to sell carbon credits or what carbon credits are and how it works, right? So that's another experience that you'd have to, or a challenge that you'd have to face. Going and educating your clients, your future potential clients, that why this is important, why their balance sheets can become stronger because of this. The ROI can increase on their investments, right? So can you talk about how your daily operations run, and what exactly makes EKI so special and a lot different actually from any other competitor that would eventually come into the market or is currently in the market?
Yeah, so to exist into our industry, there are various factors, or to maintain the leadership position in our industry, there are various factors. One is, you rightly said, is the manpower. No institute in India or maybe abroad, they used to teach how to write project design documents, how to write monitoring report, how to find a buyer, how to find a seller. So that means we have special programs within the organization to hire freshers, to hire mid-level managers, to make them aware, educated, and then we put those particular manpower for work at the business development unit or sales unit or at the operations unit. So that is the big challenge that we use. No education institute used to give the whole comprehensive knowledge in reference to this particular industry. Another thing is, since it's over-the-counter trades used to happen in our industry, so it's very important that we must have a very strong, deep relation with the buyers or the intermediaries which are located across the world. So that is another challenge, a big challenge to create a trust, to create, because various companies, they are located at various nations, at various time zones, and to have very good business relation with them, it takes time. So during last 12-13 years, we were majorly doing all this activity to develop a good manpower strength. So as of now, we can execute any kind of project located in any nation, in any technology, any methodology. We do have internal capacity. We need not to depend over any external resource to execute all those activities. Another thing is the financial resources, availability of the financial resources. During last, from 2013 to 2020, there is requirement of financial resources were less, but to deploy the particular resource was very much important. So we have deployed our resources to develop many, many projects. And the ones, our market, carbon markets came to rise during this 2021-2022. During last year, from May, actually the May, June, the carbon markets came at the surface, and it's rising each and every day, month or week. So the this resources, financial resources, human capital, vendors, the development of the vendors, readily availability, or the trust that we do develop with the vendors, either maybe the supplier of credits, or either maybe maybe the third party inspection company. So all these strong position with all these various stakeholders within the industry makes very good, and the availability of the resources makes a clear difference between us and the new entrant into the market.
Another big move that you guys have made is the joint venture with Shell that you guys have recently announced, right? And yeah, they're going to be putting in a lot of money to develop projects with you. Can you talk a little more about how that structure works and what exactly will EKI be doing, and why Shell, who is one of the largest emitters in the world, is approaching a company like EKI, which is such a small company, right, in the scale of things globally, and yet they're coming to you. There must be some reason for that. So can you, I'm really excited to know about this. Like, what is it?
Yeah, so the JV, joint venture company, having 51% majority shareholding of EKI and 49% would be there with Shell. The company is at the final stage of its incorporation. The name of the company is Amrit Nature Solutions Private Limited. And the only activity which is allowed to be done under this particular JV is the nature-based solution project. So that is the clear vision we do have, is to develop absorption-based, sequestration-based carbon credits in near future. And the three different types of credits or the projects that we are highly focusing these days is the forestation. For inforestation, it's afforestation, reforestation, degraded, that means forest degradation, stopping the forest degradation. So these are the three, four different activities that we can do under the forestry domain. Sustainable agricultural practices adaptation means using organic farming techniques, tools and techniques, using sustainable rice farming practices. So these are the different activities that we can do under the agricultural base. And the third one is the blue carbon, means putting mangroves over the seashore and claiming the carbon credit for the same. So these are the three different activities we'll be doing. We do have very good expertise to identify the right partners on ground to develop the project, or to develop the project by our own, identify. Yeah, so that is the first activity, to identify the project, then get them on ground, get them registered under the carbon credit mechanism, get them verified annually under the carbon credit mechanism, and then ultimately bring the carbon credit, because such kind of projects is totally dependent over the carbon finance. So there is no any different or other revenue stream out of the investment that we'll be doing under this particular project formation under the JV. So the major role Shell is would be doing is, and that was very much important, because in the past, if you see in the Southeast Asia or in specifically in Asian region, the nature-based solution projects were minimum as compared to the African or Latin American region. So that is also the first of its kind activity that we would be doing under this particular JV. And the Shell is having very good experience to develop the similar kind of projects across the world. They do have very good financial resources available to deploy, to develop very big, super big projects, which any Indian investor may not be able to understand the whole dynamics about the same, and how to execute all those particular projects would be a difficult one. So that is a win-win situation we have found. They do have experience in reference to developing the similar kind of projects. They do have very good financial resource availability, and they are, in fact, they are the buyer of the credits also. So that is the deadly combination, we can say. And we do have expertise in reference to the local expertise. We do have very good manpower strength within India. we can execute the projects while having a good relation with all the stakeholders, like villagers or local administration or the national level government or state level government or the different parties or stakeholders which are going to get involved within the project. So would we, with having all those good expertise to put project on ground, getting the project registration, verification and the issuance of the credits, both parties had decided then to form a joint venture company, and that is why it is one of the biggest deal you can say during year 2021-2022 in our carbon credit industry, international carbon credit industry, in reference to doing or putting or getting into the commitment to create such a large scale nature-based solution projects within India. And we do have exclusivity. JV is having exclusivity to execute all these projects, which Shell may decide to invest within India and nearby nations.
Okay. And again, this is just the beginning, right? This is the first guy who's come on board. There's so many more. 36 billion tons of CO2 emissions, right, every year. So that's a lot. All right. So you said you mentioned your relationship with the domestic parties here and villages, especially. Now, there's another project that you guys have been working on, which I'm actually excited about even more because it kind of makes you independent in terms of your supply chain, which is the cook stoves. Can you talk a little more about that? Because that sounds very interesting. And I would love to know how this works and why is a cook stove so important in the bigger scale of climate change?
So apart from technology-based projects, we have talked about the nature-based solution projects, and now the third activity that we are highly committed to develop is community-based projects. So the community-based projects they are of different types, like energy-efficient cook stove projects, water filter projects, LED light projects, these are biogas projects. So any project which is related to the community or the rural community specifically, they used to be categorized as the community-based projects. And initially, we have formed a group company that maybe in the future, it may be converted into a subsidiary of EKI. And our target is to manufacture energy-efficient cook stoves from that particular manufacturing unit and distribute the same free of cost. And again, since it's similar to the nature-based solution projects, wherein there is no any other income source apart from the carbon finance, from sale of carbon credits. So in cook stove also, we would be having the similar activity. So in the absence of all these energy-efficient cook stoves, people used to have, if you have observed or if you have experienced in the rural community, people used to cook their food over 3 stones or 2 stones or whatever the support that they can get underneath the utensil they would get under, I mean, with which they want to cook their food. Either inefficiently designed U-shaped stove. So the thermal efficiency, whatever the wood we would be using or we would be burning under those inefficient practices, the thermal efficiency used to be ranging in between 5 to 8%. So whatever the heat that you are generating after burning that particular wood, whatever heat that we are generating, only 5, 7, or 8% heat would be able to use it to cook the food. So that means more wood would be required under those inefficient practices. The energy efficient cook stove made up of metal, properly engineered or technically designed. We will be giving the same to the rural community people. Therein, wood consumption would reduce. So that means the trees that they are cutting out of forest or within forest, that particular degradation will reduce. Apart from that, whatever the smoke that used to happen because of the inefficient use of the old practices, would also reduce. So that means the health of children and the women who are all there within the home, because of their internal environment improvement, their health will also improve. Then they need not to go to the forest to collect the wood, for example. So that means they can remain more time at home. They can do more livelihood projects. They can give more attention to the kids for their education, for example. And whatever the mishappening that may happen with them when they travel to the lonely places to collect that particular wood would also reduce. So there are various co-benefits which are associated with all such kind of community-based projects, apart from the carbon credits that we can claim. So the different sustainable development goals or the parameters we would be supporting while developing all these kind of projects. And that is why we are highly concentrated to develop these two different kind of activities, which is, again, you can say a backward integration of ours to have sustainable supply of carbon credits. Yeah.
Absolutely. But you're going to manufacture these and you're going to basically distribute them for free, because that would give you a revenue from the carbon credits that you can generate. But can you talk about the economics of that? Like, how much can you make it for, and how much can you get from those carbon credits?
So the Cookstow project cost used to vary depending over the metal cost and the other factors, the distribution cost and various other factors. So consider it's ranging in between 2,000 to 3,000 rupees per Cookstow. Again, depending on the baseline, what is the cooking habit of any particular individual or any particular home or the group of homes in a particular region, what is the baseline practices that you used to have? How many Cookstow they used to have, how much wood they used to use, so that will do bring the baseline for the same. So it may range in between 4 carbon credit to 7 carbon credit per Cookstow annually. And again, depending over the international carbon market prices, which may range in between, say, $3 to $10 for such kind of projects, depending over the quantity, the country of origin, sustainable development parameters that we are supporting. So all these are the three different parameters by which we would be able to have a good business case.
Interesting. Very interesting. That's 4 to 7 credits. That's almost 5,000 rupees that you can make from a 2,000 rupee stove.
So it depends. Somily depends on various parameters, because you may be thinking like it's say $10 as of now, and so it may be 5,000 rupees. But later the carbon credit prices used to vary. They are not very much fixed. So that means we need to take a cautious decision.
Oh, absolutely,
no. Kind of investment.
True. True. That is very true. Now, there's been talks of a compliance market being set up in India, right? Yeah. You mentioned it in your DRHP as well when you were listing that the government has tried a few things with corporates on small scale. Do you have any idea of how that's going, and when can we expect something to come up, some concrete news to come up? Is something in the pipeline, or is it still far away, like a few years away?
So coming over the background first, since Indian government had signed Paris Agreement, and we are now also one of the obligated entity to reduce our emission. Indian government had submitted a national determined contribution document, NDC, during year 2015, and during November 2021, our Prime Minister had declared a more ambitious target at Glasgow meeting during November 2021 last year. So since Indian government is very much obligated to reduce its emission, and government alone would not be able to do by its own, so that means you can say India and all other nations would be requiring a very good emission trading mechanism apart from a carbon tax mechanism, because if you do put a carbon tax, if it's a very small nation, then to collect a carbon tax would be easy. To deploy the fund that it will do collect from the carbon tax would be easy, but for the nations like India, it would be very tough. Because each state, each region, they used to have different requirement, different socio-economic environment in reference to reducing the emissions. So that means emission trading scheme for the country like us would be very much appropriate path to reduce the emission, to involve private sector. It would be very easy if we do have emission trading scheme, and Indian government is working over the same. So we do have Energy Conservation Act 2001, which is under amendment as of my information, and under by which Bureau of Energy Efficiency under Ministry of Power would be giving power to develop voluntary markets emission trading scheme for initial few years, and then that particular scheme may be converted into the compliance one in next in next 3 to 5 years timeline. So and it would be again similar to the cap and trade mechanism which is quite famous there, for example, in Europe. It's emission trading scheme, EU ETS. In India, we have experienced a similar mechanism called as PAT, perform, achieve and trade, which is majorly focusing over the energy efficiency or tons of oil equivalent reduction or benchmarking, specific energy consumption benchmarking for the products for various industries like textile or for steel. So government had given specific energy consumption target to different private players, or the those, or you can say not private players, but you can say a designated consumers, DC. So they have given the target, and if they are not able to meet the same, they have to buy white certificates. And if they are able to meet the target, if they are overachieving the same, the white certificate should be issued to them, and that is again tradable. So Indian government or Indian designated consumers, the big companies, big organizations, which are using huge energy, large quantum of energy. So they have experienced a similar mechanism in the past. And that means they are still obligated under the PAT mechanism. But that particular mechanism would be then converted into the emission trading scheme in near future. And then it would be, the boundaries would be expanded to the SMEs, to the service sectors in next 3 to 5 years timeline. So that is the Indian government. And although, just for your information, since Bureau of Energy Efficiency under Ministry of Power would be doing, but the nodal agency to do all this activity is Ministry of Environment, Forest and Climate Change. So MFCC is the nodal agency for all these climate actions or climate change issues. While at the domestic level, Bureau of Energy Efficiency would be playing its important role. While at the international level, for the international communication, MFCC would remain the nodal agency.
Interesting. I actually didn't know we had a committee like that. So that's news to me as well. Okay, so let's say we do have a compliance market set up in a few years. And it's now, from my understanding, we already have a huge supply and demand gap in the global markets, right? Where the demand keeps increasing as more and more companies come on board and start understanding what this is, or either they're in the cap and trade regions and the supply isn't really coming up and catching up to the demand. Now, what happens when one of the largest emitters in the world and the economy of the world comes online with a compliance market? Where does that supply come from? Because already you're one of the biggest in our country and in the world. You're taking all of this supply and you're selling it outside, most of it at least, right? Now, when the demand comes in to the Indian markets, where they have to comply and they have to get carbon credits, where does the supply come from?
So again, it depends over the price dynamics. For example, if that particular company is looking to offer more, then all those exports will do get diverted to that particular buyer. So that is the simple dynamics that they may happen. So yeah, that is what I think in reference to. And also, since the awareness that we do have within the nation related to the carbon market is quite low, and so whatsoever the carbon credits which are originated are getting exported as of now. But once we'll be having more obligation within the nation, more parties, more investment, more private players will become investor to all those kind of projects, and more credits would be generated. So it's a simple business metrics, you can say, wherever the investors, good investors will do find the investment opportunity, more future outlook, more secure deals in reference to selling the carbon credits within the nation, more and more investment will come. And that is the main target or the main objective of the Paris Agreement also. That means the private sector investment or the private sector involvement should be more as compared to the more ambitious, not more, right, but more ambitious as compared to the target that we do have under the Paris Agreement. So if you see under the Paris Agreement to meet a target of 1.5 degrees centigrade by 2050, we need to cap that global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees centigrade. And to achieve that particular goal, we need around 50 to 60 billion tons of carbon credit, carbon credits or tons of CO2 emission reduction from the atmosphere. And we need super high investments or awareness to meet that particular goal, which is in Indian government had declared that we want to achieve the same by year 2070. Chinese government had declared that they want to achieve by 2060, and major developed nations, they want to be to achieve this by 2050. And that is a super Herculean task, or you can say target, that the nations or the governments or the private sector is having to, although we do have 50 years timeline within India, but again, if we can achieve, or we can, if we can align, if we can become more ambitious as compared to other developed nations, it would be very good for because by next 50 years, for example, if we are having this particular target, then the natural calamities or the disasters that that we are able to see, the climate change that we are able to see because of the global warming, more high frequency drastic events will do happen if we do wait for such a long period. But since you know why we have set this particular target, because we are one of the developing nation, and if although we should be very ambitious, but we also want to have very high ambition in reference to the GDP. And if we'll do become more ambitious in terms of reduction of emissions, obviously the GDP is going to go down for the same. And each nation wants to have their high GDP, high reserves that they can have. So that means the obligation that the developed nations, they do have, because they are the largest emitter in the past, and they must do achieve this particular goal more sooner than the nations like us, which are developing nations. So again, it's a fight in between the finance and climate change.
And I think our Prime Minister at COP26 said that the developed nations have to provide around $1 trillion of aid. And then I was reading an article where Bill Gates has said that for this transition, which is once in a generation, you probably need more than $100 trillion of investment in climate change solutions over a period of 30 years from here on. And that's a big ask. That's a lot of money that's required to make this happen.
Yes. So climate finance, with this, the climate finance in reference to either in the form of grant that had been declared as $100 billion during COP21 at Paris, during the Paris Agreement era, time period, all the developed nations, they had declared that they will give $100 billion on every year basis, which they are not able to comply, fulfill the commitment that they do have. So in the form of grant, in the form of climate in the form of carbon finance, in the form of, say, carbon credits. It's a very important role these days because the climate finance to achieve this ambitious goal, it's a very important field that the financial community had also observed or they had adopted since, you know, various funds, various investors. Now, whatever the investment they are doing, they want to make themselves assured that they all those portfolios, all the new investments or the old investments that they have done, that should be aligned with the net zero goal that the nations had signed for the same. So now we are able to see various mutual funds which are linked with SDG parameters or the Paris Agreement goals, various mutual funds, various investment groups, or you can say fund houses, they are highly or super focused for whatever the new investment that they are doing, that should be more sustainable, more create, should create more sustainability over Earth or any particular nation. And so you can see the funds related to the fossil fuel based power projects or the projects which are which they do emit high emissions into the atmosphere. It's very tough for them to get finance secured for all those new projects these days.
Right. Even I think even the green bond market is kind of harsh for them
yes.
because of the same reason. And that is eventually going to be the deciding factor. Anyway, now moving on. Now, this clearly seems like a very dynamic industry and it's a new industry, but it is growing very fast. Right. And it is the need of the hour. Now, in any industry which is so dynamic and where there's so much money on the table, competition is inevitable, right? So how do you look at this? How do you think about the competitive landscape when it comes to all kinds of exchanges, when it comes to other carbon traders like you, climate solution providers? What does this entire ecosystem look like in the next 10, 15 years?
So if you see the exchanges in the last voluntary in the compliance market, it would be very easy to have one exchange because the regulatory body, they put their own exchange carbon, they may control carbon credit prices, which used to happen, for example, there in Europe. Whenever the prices goes high, if they go low, then the regulatory body can control. Like similarly in BSE, NSE, we do have through SEBI. These stocks used to get controlled or used to remain in observation so that the investors used to get very good or the buyer seller used to get very good fair deals or transparent deals, you can say. So in our voluntary carbon market, so as of now, for the credits originated from India or other developing Asian, there's no any compliance market readily available. For the voluntary carbon markets, in the past, since you can say the voluntary carbon market did exist for last 15 years, and during last 15 years, it was there's no any exchange. And why there's no any exchange? Because since we discussed during initial period of our conversation today. So each carbon credit used to have its unique pricing mechanism depending on the various parameters or the deadly combinations, permutation combinations, whatsoever you can say. And so to have an exchange, there should be a simple commodity. For example, if it's a carbon credit, so tons of CO2 would remain the same, but the different parameters in reference to the investment scenario that the project had gone through, sustainable development goal parameters, vintage effect, technology effect, country of origin effect. So it would be highly difficult for any exchange to get established. And if, for example, if any particular exchange would get established, then again, there is a high problem that all buyers or majority of the buyers should come over that particular exchange, all sellers or the majority of the sellers should come over that particular exchange. And then with all these different permutation combinations, there should be different indices wherein people would be able to buy and sell the credit. So it is super, super tough. So the important key factor is if the whole voluntary carbon mechanism, or you can say whole voluntary carbon market, is unstructured in nature. there is no any association or alliance for all the buyers or all the sellers or all the regulatory body. And once they will do come together, then only single voice to have more rigid mechanism to buy and sell the credit will do come. So that by that way, I do not foresee that by next 5 years we will be able to see such kind of competition in the market. There are various marketplaces which in their name they call them as an exchange, but they are not exchange. They are the marketplaces which are only giving the platform all those exchanges, or you can say the platforms, they do used to communicate separately with the buyer and seller, and they only facilitate those buyer and seller to come over the online platform and exchange the credits with their money. So that is the only advantage. So that means that they do not need to sign a contract. They need not to worry about the money. They need not to worry about the credits. And that is the trust that we have developed with our whole community, or you can say whole stakeholders upstream or downstream within the present carbon markets. And so only giving one IT support for all these activities would not create a good competitive landscape for all such kind of activities. So that means we are not very much optimistic that such kind of activity may come in next 5 years timeline. And obviously the other competitors at the national international level, so it's looking at the figures, looking at the market opportunities, obviously competition will to come, while the competitive advantages that Enking International or EK Energy Services Limited organization is having as compared to those like availability of human capital, availability of financial capital, or the relations that we have built with the buyer and seller or with the whole stakeholders within the industry, it would be super tough for them, because for the last 8-9 years, we have very good market share, very good resource availability, relations availability. It would be tough for them to easily grow within the industry.
Have you personally ever given it a thought of creating an exchange for yourself as EKI? Because there's more than just carbon credits, right? There's water, there's plastic, there's carbon, obviously. There's a lot of other commodities that can be probably traded on exchanges because of the fact that they're either scarce or polluted or polluting the world. And that is the need of the hour again, right?
So the plastic credit or water credit, they are not very much famous as of now. Yeah. If you see the climate change, global warming is more serious issue as compared to the plastic and water, which I do understand. And the ambition, or you can say the obligation, or you can say the actions these nations or private companies are taking in global warming scenario or the global warming or climate change field is quite not very much ambitious. So that means the water credits and plastic credits will do come later. Once the carbon credits or the climate change industry should get more robust boost as compared to those two different commodities. And what I do believe, since global warming is, that means by its word we say it's a global warming, that means it's not a regional warming. It's not a nation level warming, but it's a global warming. Whatever the activity, whatever the emissions that we are doing here in India, definitely is going to impact other nations also. But whatever the plastic emissions or the pollution, plastic pollution, you can say whatever we do we are doing at the regional level, the water pollution or the water credits which are generated at the regional level, they are not very much connected with the international markets, because all this, like the water streams, the pure or the soft water stream, or you can say the drinking water streams, are not very much connected with the streams there in Germany. So it's to sell the water credits which are originated from developing nations like India, which is the streams are not very much connected with the, for example, in Germany or in France or in, say, in Brazil. So it's super tough for people to convince to buy whatever the water saving activities that we are doing here in India should be, if all those credits may be tradable in the, maybe in other state also, it would be difficult within India and to sell the same internationally would be super tough. But in after this climate action, you can say the carbon credits or the air pollution, the next streams would be obviously plastic and water, but they may take around 10 years time period. Yes. So by next 5 years, globally, this carbon credit industry would be at its peak, while once this particular market will to get its whole recognition and somehow maturity, a good position in the market, then this kind of commodities will to get their shape and size. So that is. So we are not very much focused as of now for all other commodities like water credit or plastic credit. But in near future, yes, we may be interested to develop.
So this is a good segue into my next question. Now, all this money coming into climate change solutions, carbon sequestration, carbon capture solutions, you have electric vehicles, renewable energy, plant-based food. There's so many different things happening, right? And a lot of money is going into all of this, which is basically just going to reduce the amount of emissions we have. And eventually, let's say we do get to a net zero future by 2050, by 2060, whatever that is. What is the role of EKI or any other carbon solution or carbon credit solution company once there's no need for carbon credits anymore? Is there anything that you've thought of other than the plastic and water that we just spoke about? Where does this company go 30, 40 years down the line?
So the organizations like us who are there in the carbon credit industry or the climate change space, for example, so that whatever the target, Somil, we do have related to the net zero is whatever the emission that we will be doing, we need to absorb the same. And for India, it's a target for, say, for nations. For other nations also, so it's ranging in between 30 years to 50 years. So once we'll do achieve, for example, net zero, and although it is going to be super tough, we may say that we will be able to achieve by 50 or 60 or 70, it is going to be super tough because then we need to compromise the nation's GDP for the same. And the technology availability, financial resource availability, awareness among the different stakeholders in reference to the same. So it is going to be super tough. But for example, if we do achieve the same, then the next target would be whatever the emissions that we have done since year 2050 or 60 or 1960 or 1970, for example, because the major industrialization had been started from that particular era. So whatever the 1.5 degree centigrade temperature rise, we do have the target to reduce, to cap the same. And after capping the same, we also have to reduce all those greenhouse gases that we have added into the atmosphere. And also we have to achieve, we have to maintain that particular target also, because if once we will lose the control, then again the emissions we may go high and the absorption will remain the low. So that means for next 100 years, Somil, I think our climate change industry, or you can say the climate change consultant or advisor industry, is not going to face any survival issue.
That's a very interesting point of view. All right, so let's talk about how we're going to do this in the shorter term. Right now we have all these joint ventures that you're getting into, you have your vertical integration planned, but what are the real growth drivers now? Is it regulation? Is it carbon price? Is it something else? Like in the near term, 5 years, 10 years, where is the growth really coming from?
So as of now, the carbon credit rates, you see, the rates that are going up is, or you can say the requirement for the carbon credits in the voluntary market is going up. So that means various and various companies are doing their voluntary obligation signing to achieve that particular goal. After that, under the Article 6.4 of the Paris Agreement, or you can say under Article 6 of the Paris Agreement, there are two different mechanisms. Article 6.2, wherein two nations will do sign the MOU and will do help them each other to reduce emission and then distribute the carbon credits that would be generated between the two. The third one is Article 6.4, which is again a compliance mechanism sort of thing, wherein nations would be able to meet their NDC targets while buying and selling the carbon credits. So the market, as of now, the voluntary market is around $2 billion, and once the compliance market across the nations, Article 6.2, 6.4, and again the voluntary actions that the people would be the organizations, the private organizations have the voluntary pledges that they have signed, is going to create a very big demand, and which we have discussed during a few minutes back. We need around 50 to 60 billion carbon credit to achieve that particular Paris Agreement goal, 1.5 degree centigrade capping. And these three markets, voluntary market, Article 6.2 market, Article 6.4 market, is going to create a huge demand for the carbon industry.
In your opinion, what's the right price for a carbon offset to make sure that companies actually make an effort to go green or to go net zero?
So climate finance is one of the important finance wherein the technologies which are not feasible in nature, or for example, so carbon sequestration technology, we can discuss about the same. So the mechanism or the economics, you can say the investment or the operating cost for all this kind of carbon sequestration or the CO2 sequestration technologies in the present scenario is there. So for any particular investor, they will not invest into such technologies, inefficient technologies, because there is no any incentive for them to operate, because why they would invest if they are not able to get the return on investment within 5 to 10 years time period. If you see the return on investment is 20, 30 years time period, who is going to put the whole money at the year zero? So it is very tough for them. And the carbon credit or climate finance used to help us to bridge the gap between the benchmark return, internal rate of return that any particular investor is looking for, and the actual rate of return. And whatever the difference is there, if the climate finance or the carbon finance or the carbon credit, the sale of carbon credit is if that particular gap will get fulfilled with the help of this particular mechanism, then more and more investors will do come to adopt or to invest into the clean technologies or climate or carbon sequestration based technologies. So that is the super important. The climate finance is going to play a very super important role in reference to adaptation of all these technologies which are not very much financially attractive.
Right. All right. Last question. All right. I've taken enough of your time. Now, I personally believe that we are in an era of exponential tech advancements. All right. Whether it be AI, machine learning, electric vehicles, battery storage, like we said, plant-based food, 3D printing, smart cities, blockchain technology, space manufacturing. There is so much going on, right? And the future looks very bright. There's a lot of innovation happening around us, and there's a lot of disruption that is going to come soon. In your own head, what is the picture of the world in 2050 or 2060, like 30, 40 years down the line? What do you think the world looks like?
So whatever the technologies that we are going to have in the future, so and whatever the technologies which are there at present, so to achieve that particular Paris Agreement goal of capping only 1.5 degree centigrade, that means not going below the same, because the next target for us will be to achieve the temperature, 0 degree temperature rise. So that would be the next goal we would be having. So whatever the new technologies that are upcoming in the market, that should support all the stakeholders in the market to adopt the low carbon pathway. Again, all those technologies may not be able to survive, may not be able to get their good traction if they are not helping the manufacturing unit or the private sector investors or the service sector investors, or you can say overall government. If those technologies are going to support the net zero, these particular stakeholders to achieve their net zero goals, they are going to survive and have exclusive growth in your future. So all these technologies like AI is also going to support, because again, it will reduce the human interaction or human interference, and the intelligence that artificially we would be able to generate, again, it is going to help us to reduce emissions. One of the good example that I can give you is, for example, if in our Indore city, if we do have very good AI solution with which whatever the street lights that used to get its electrical power at the evening time, for example. So at the right time, for example, because we do have various operators which are located within the city at various different zones within the city, and all those different operators, they used to supply electrical energy to the street lights at a different time, depending over their cautiousness or maybe the time availability. So if we'll be going to have a very good AI solution in the form of electronic hardware along with the software, if we'll get that particular thing, then obviously the electricity consumption will reduce for the city. For the initial year, it should be some significant saving, but in future, it is going to help a city to reduce its emission, because you know all the cities in India now, they are also very much cautious. They do have very cautious decision in reference to the achieving net zero emissions or become smart city or a low carbon city. So that is the emission they do have. So yeah, again, coming over the question, these technologies, if they are going to support low carbon pathways, definitely are going to have a very good market, and the investors who are going to give investment for adopting all those technologies, the financial resource, houses, you can say, or the fund houses, or the investors, or the technology providers. If all those stakeholders will do think that they only do promote the low carbon technologies or low carbon pathways or processes, optimization for the same, that is the vision, or you can say the expectation I do have in next 30-50 years.
Brilliant. Manish, it has been a pleasure talking to you, right? Thank you so much for giving me this time, and I hope there's a lot more people who can learn a lot more about carbon sequestration, carbon capture, carbon credits, most importantly. And we need to do this, right? We need to do this together. There's no countries here. There's no religion here. There's none of that. It's one planet, like you said. There is no boundaries in the air. So global warming is going to affect everyone. And it's a great cause. And to make a business out of it, and such a successful business out of it, is an amazing achievement, in my opinion. So congratulations for that, and all the best for the future.
Yeah, thank you, Samuel, for organizing today a conversation and discussing over the critical topics, which I think are not very much easily available over the internet. All this information about the carbon market, carbon credits, the present scenario within India and abroad, and the future scenario of the technology and the carbon market. So I think it is going to help your listeners. So it is going to definitely help them, and wish you best of luck for the same.
Thank you very much, Manish.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Enlightened Investor Podcast. The purpose of this podcast is purely educational, and anything discussed on the podcast should not be considered as investment advice. And always remember, invest in the future you wish to live in.